It is the Tuesday, February 28th, 2023 City Council meeting. I will call to order and start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Poulter, why don't you lead us? Or did you last time?
No, I wasn't here.
That's right, you never left.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Go ahead with the roll call, please.
Coke.
Here.
Transier.
Here.
Clocher.
Here.
Soling.
Here.
Funkhauser.
Here.
Merrick.
Here.
Terulis is absent. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Okay, I've had a request for an amendment to the agenda. I don't, Mr. Funkhauser, do you want to discuss your suggestion?
It would be my mayor's report number 3, the fiscal year 2024 budget policy discussion up after presentation number 1.
Anyone opposed to that? So what I would just say is, why don't we do the second mayor's report, all of that there, because the first two items aren't that long, and the second one's a little bit tied to the third one. Okay, so we'll do that after number 1. You're going to have to remind me, because I'm sure I'll try to zip through these other things. I'm making a note right now. Okay. Next, we have a presentation to Ben Alvarez. So Ben was the IHSA, that's Illinois High School Association, Class 3A Boys Individual Wrestling State Champion at, was it 220? Well, come on forward, this is exciting. Want to get an A in your government class, you can stick around for our wonderful civics lesson tonight. Okay, thank you very much. And at Mr. Funkhauser's suggestion and request, we'll move on to the mayor's report continued. Now, you've got me a little discombobulated, Mr. Funkhauser. Usually I jot things down to say throughout the meeting, but since it's the beginning of the meeting, I don't have anything. So I'll turn over to Bart.
Yeah, for the city building updates, we did not get delivery of our last pieces of network equipment as we thought we would last month, or last week, rather. So our new delivery date is mid-March, so we won't know for sure whether it's going to be shipped until about March 15th. And then after that, it's going to take us a few weeks to get everything up and running in the new building, so we're currently targeting a mid-April move-in date. Again, contingent upon network equipment delivery. That's my update.
Any questions on that item? Next.
Water study update. We continue to have engineer meetings, legal meetings, strategy meetings with our counterparts in the region and with DuPage Water Commission. And everything is going to come to a head here later this spring and this summer with funding plans and cost estimates and everything else. And without giving away the presentation, we do have hundreds of thousands of dollars of expenditures, for DWC type projects in next year's budget, and millions of dollars each year thereafter. So starting to come up a little bit into focus, but not enough to have a huge plan.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, any questions on that? I was looking for this, sorry. Okay, well, we're cruising right along. The rest of the meeting probably won't be this quick, but go right ahead to item number three here.
Okay, so I didn't get a chance to put together anything in writing prior to the meeting, so it's all going to be PowerPoint presentations. So just give me a second here. I'll get this up and running.
Could someone get the lights, please? The new building will just say computer lights off, just
right.
Like Star Trek, right?
Yes. Okay, so just to give you an idea of where we're at in our budget process, we have not released the full budget yet. We identified these two issues as potentially large issues that need some feedback, and wanted to give the city council enough time to adjust them and ask questions and figure out what you guys need in order to vote on this in a later date. So tonight is a policy discussion only, mainly on how we fund a large cluster of subdivisions that were built in the mid-2000s and how we repay those roadways in the next several years. And then our Lake Michigan water projects, which the mayor had discussed at the last meeting. We're starting to think about next year's water rate increase, and we've identified some alternative sources of revenue, like food and beverage tax or police and eating tax, as an alternative to basically a water rate increase for next year. So that's tonight. We will have a full project presentation at the next city council meeting in March, a public hearing in March 28th, and then the city council just has to vote on the budget before the end of April. So again, tonight's outline is going to dive into, we have Road to Better Roads programs funded at $1.5 million per year in general. We have tens of millions of dollars in roadway to be done in the next 5 to 10 years. So not quite as dire as Lake Michigan, that price tag. But we have a lot of legacy subdivisions that were built in our boom years that have not ever had pavement redone on them, and so they're coming due. And so how should we pay for that? Do we look for an increase in revenue, broad new revenue stream, or a new revenue stream, or should we just wait, bond it all out, and then make future residents pay for it a number of ways at a later date? So that's one discussion. Now the second discussion will be the Lake Michigan Water Source Project, specifically as it relates to next year's water rate increase proposal, or a place to meet tax. Okay, so we're going to start with the Road to Better Roads policy discussion. And so I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page, so I'm going to do a little bit of history lesson. So our comprehensive pavement management plan, that was created in 2012, involves staff, outsourced consultants, a little truck with laser scanning on it that drives through the town, surveys the roadway pavement, and makes some data points for it, both on the condition of the pavement at the top of the roadway, and even some assumptions about the base of the roadway on age and how the pavement looks. So when we did that in 2012, we identified our annual funding target as about $2 million in order to keep things in a maintainable category. And maintainable means you've got a little cost-efficient chart here. Catching roadways at their deterioration point, which is the squiggly line here, at certain points where you can seal it or pave it with a minimal overlay. Do things that are cheaper to do that actually extend the life of the roadway, you know, by multiples, rather than waiting for the roadway to become gravel and then having to replace it from the base up, which can be very expensive. So again, minimal cost of high benefit is what we try to do strategically. So after we've identified those roadways, we talk about them in 2, 3, 4, 5 year plans sometimes, depending on the year. We have then different pots of money that we fund these things with. So we have pavement only, the citywide capital fund, motor fuel taxes. Historically, over the life of the program, we spent between $500,000 at the beginning to about $1.5 million annually right now. So just slightly below that annual target, but when we have one-off projects as they come up, we've been spending more than our annual target the past 2 years, so we're catching up. And then additionally, there are water projects that come up in town. Some of the water mains are actually beneath the roadway, so as you dig up the roadway, you have to replace the roadway with pavement. And so, you know, depending on the year, you've got $500,000 to $2 million worth of water main projects that just happen to improve the pavement above it, which improves our roadway score overall. So when I'm talking about the cluster of subdivisions, so just as a reminder, Yorkville is one of the fastest growing cities in the country in the early 2000s. In our peak of 2006, we built 1,000 new dwelling units in 1 year. The year before that, it was in the 600 or 700s, and we're currently doing 200 to 300. So we still are like a top five municipality in Illinois for percentage growth. And Kendall County was one of the fastest growing counties in the nation for years during that time. So all of these subdivisions were built in the early 2000s, maybe even the late 90s. Crystal Bay, Cottons Ridge, Prairie Meadows, Autumn Creek, Heartland, Crescent Circle, River's Edge, Raintree Village, and Fox Highlands, all across the city, miles of pavement in each subdivision, that all are coming due somewhere in the 2026 to 2028 time frame. So we have a couple years to talk about it, how we want to structure it, but that is on our radar screen, and it's within our five-year budgeting, so we need to start talking about it now. The earliest estimates from the engineer is that those 23 miles of roadway are going to be, you know, $11 million or so to repave if we catch them at the right time and everything goes okay. So this is what this looks like, and I apologize, I can't zoom in and see this, but this is the list of the roadways, subdivisions, the length of the roadway, the pavement scores, the dollar amounts, and so it's the 23 miles of $11 million. And again, here's the map, I can't zoom in here, but it'll be available on the website, you know, all throughout the city. So some of these subdivisions, the green ones, are the ones that are coming due sooner rather than the purple ones, which are later. And so that's what you're looking at here, is subdivisions on all sides of the city and all boards that need to be repaved here in the next few years. So just to give you some points of fact, you know, for your use in a policy decision. Again, $3.5 million or so needs to be spent between 2026 and 2028 annually to get those 23 miles of roadway across 9 subdivisions completed. Additionally, we have a normal Road to Better Roads program, $1.5 million. We think, and we haven't planned this out far enough in advance yet to be able to say with certainty, but we think that those subdivisions are going to be on top of normal roads throughout the city that are just going to come due in their cycle. So we're saying it's likely on top of the normal Road to Better Roads program. This is, you know, all incremental funding that needs to be identified. But it's possible as we get closer, we do the analysis, that some of that you might be able to say, well, we're only going to do $500,000 one year. We've got $1.5 million funded. And so then you've, you know, dedicated $1 million to our subdivision problem going forward. But we won't know that for a couple years. So again, $1.5 million is what we've got allocated annually. $11 million for these subdivision clusters. Just to give you an idea of how we pay for that, a lot of money does come from the general fund, non-mobile sales taxes, other capital funds, but we have our road infrastructure fee, which is our basically the vehicle tax, stickerless vehicle sticker, you know, that is another way to look at it. It's $8 per month per household, no matter how many cars you have in the city, and it generates $850,000 a year that we dedicate towards our Road to Better Roads program of $1.5 million. So again, we created that infrastructure fee when we didn't have a way to pay for roads in 2013, really at the valley of our fiscal issues. And so the city council decided that's how they were going to fund the MODIS program at the time. And if we would have adjusted that on an inflationary basis from 2013 forward, it'd be somewhere around $10.30 per month. So about $1.5 million. So there's, you know, $250,000 left on the table, at least from not taking inflationary increases, you know, per year. So a couple scenarios here just for food for thought. And again, you do not have to make a decision on this tonight. If lightning strikes and everybody says, no, this is the scenario we're going, great, we'll take that and run with it. But the purpose of this is to just put it on a plate, let you guys take a look at it, and then we will, you know, decide at a later date as we're approving the budget. So one scenario could be no change in the road infrastructure fee and just, you know, complete the roads when they're due. So in order to do that, you'd have to bond out around $10 million at least. So again, it's $11 million. We're forecasting now it'd be about $10 million. So you'd have to come up with a $900,000 revenue stream post-bond issuance to be able to pay off that debt over a 15-year period. So just think about that in current terms. $850,000 is generated by our current road infrastructure fees. You need to double it and then pay off that bond over time. The second scenario, you could not change the road infrastructure fee and then just complete the road whenever the funding is there. So this is what we used to do. There were years in the mid-2000s where we did no pavement rehab for a number of years because we didn't have the money, and it caught up to us in the mid-2010s, obviously. So instead of repaving a road once every 15 years or once every 20 years or whenever it comes up based on a pavement life cycle, you'd be looking at 25 years or 30 years, basically back to a condition where the top of the pavement is going to be so bad that people will call and say, there's potholes everywhere, what are you doing about the road? But you could do it. That's a policy decision the city council could do, and we've decided to stay within our current revenue streams. Another scenario, just adjusting a one-time increase in the road infrastructure fee. So if you take it from $8 to $9.60 per month, again, so that would be actually less than inflation if we would have just moved it along each year since 2013. You know, you'd be able to get rid of $2 or $3 million in bonding, and you'd have a lower debt service payment after that. So you'd only have to identify $670,000 at that point. So, and then inflationary increases after that, under that scenario. So then the fourth one is, maybe you don't want to do a one-time increase, you want to just do 4% inflationary increases. So if you do that, it would go from $8 to $8.32 per month in the first year, and then, you know, you'd reduce your bonding amount by $1 to $2 million. So you'd only have a $775,000 service payment. That's what you're up against. That's what the, you know, the funding streams and needs of the subdivisions dictate at this point. So, and I'm providing this only as an illustration basis. So if you said, we don't like bonding, we don't like incurring interest, which I wouldn't recommend, I don't think this is sustainable, but we're showing for informational purposes, pay as you go. So you would have to, you know, take your road infrastructure fee from, that should say per billing cycle actually, up to $68 per billing cycle instead of per month. So you'd have to more than quadruple it in order to pay off those subdivisions. So not feasible, but we wanted to show it to you just so you can see it. Okay, so then the policy decision here, again, does not have to be decided upon tonight. You've got a large subdivision cluster, 3 to 5 years out in the future, that needs to be redone. And you cannot fund it with current cash flow. So the question is, you know, do you want to increase the current funding levels, or do you want to delay the pavement projects, or a little bit of both? So again, some food for thought here on the road infrastructure fee. Every dollar per month that you increase that fee over the course of a year will generate about $100,000 annually. So that's what you're looking at for subdivision funding and pavement over the next few years. So before I go on to the water, does anybody have any questions about that?
Is this based on today's population or the projections?
Rob made some general conservative assumptions for growth, 1 to 2% per year. So not enough that it's going to move the needle. I mean, obviously, if you grew 4 or 5%, which has happened, we have a large condo development. You know, that would spread that out a little bit more. It would make it a little bit more affordable, but it's still not going to get you to the end goal of just being able to pay for cash flow.
Ken?
So this one was to go up, and then what about the water infrastructure fee? That's on there too. It's the same amount, I believe, right? I think it's a different amount, but water, they were the same. And then you had the water rates.
Ken, we'll talk about water next.
Water is water, but I'm talking about the water infrastructure fee.
Yeah, we're not suggesting. Rob, we're not suggesting anything with that, are we? But part of it depends on.
It's $16.50, so it's similar to the road. It's just a 50-cent difference.
Right.
That's what I want to find out that is.
But we'll talk about that, and that can be part of that discussion.
Well, I'm talking about what I was thinking here, because you're going to pay all the fees and the rates, right? That's what we're saying.
That's why we're discussing. We don't know. We're throwing this out for discussion because we need to address these issues. We just can't ignore them.
Okay, moving on. So we've got Lake Michigan as our second large legacy capital improvement project that we need to talk about. So again, current project costs are estimated in the $120 million range, and we're going to have that dialed in a little bit better in the next few months. We previously communicated when we were choosing our water source that water rates would have to more than double at that point. So it was $45 per month a couple years ago for just water, no sewer, no garbage, none of the other things on the utility bill, to north of $90, $95 where we are. So that is our most recent estimate. So you have your current funding level, and then you have the funding level required to use Lake Michigan project that is far greater than what you currently have. So City Council has asked us to discuss alternative revenue streams. As far as I know, Montgomery hasn't publicly discussed too many things, so I don't have anything from them yet. Oswego, they did their real estate transfer tax. Again, it's only for property owners that are coming in from outside of the city and buying property in Oswego. So if you're buying property, selling property in Oswego, generally you're exempt from that tax. They have talked about it generating about $500,000 annually. They're on pace for that over the course of a 12-month period after it's been implemented. That's not available to us yet. We have to be a home rule town. You can put it on a referendum, and then the voters actually have to approve it. So that is a two-step process that is probably at least 3 or 4 years out from us even being able to consider it, let alone implement it now and fund some part of the projects. Second, Oswego has a food and beverage tax. They actually implemented that in 2018. So they generate almost $1 million from their restaurants and bars in Oswego, on top of their normal $8 million that they get in regular local sales tax. So I don't know that ours would be a similar proportion, but that gives you one example. Our best estimates that we've looked up with sales tax data from the bars and restaurants in town, $600,000 to $700,000 for each 1% is what we're thinking. And our sales taxes for the current fiscal year are projected to be between $4 and $4.5 million. So a little bit different proportions for us, but that's our best estimate as well. And then just remember, to Alderman Cope's comment, the water utility and Lake Michigan project are really supposed to be self-sufficient. It's an enterprise fund, it's supposed to be run by a business. While we can designate things like sales taxes, food and beverage taxes, real estate transfer taxes, in Oswego's case, to water projects, you really should not have costs that aren't water related in the water fund. So it's supposed to be a relative closed loop of revenues matching expenditures for just the water utility. So keep that in mind as we're talking about anything. So, and just so everybody knows, I mean, we aren't going straight to water rates. Over the years, I have been, participating with multiple city council members, mayors. How do we get out of our fiscal issues in 2011, 2012? At that point, we chose to do a non-home rule sales tax by referendum. We had to increase revenues to 90% in order to be able to pay off bonds. So we had this awful conversation about, can we lay off most of our staff and still function? Can we outsource some? Can we increase revenues? We had those in-depth conversations for months on end, a decade ago. We had it again during COVID. We had memos that were pages long that identified could be lay off people, could be wage reductions, could be do project deferrals, could be raise revenues, and all those things. So I think the structure is already built in place into this organization to be able to have those difficult conversations because we've vetted them already over multiple councils and multiple years in the past. So again, non-home rule sales tax, we've looked at that, we implemented it in 2012. property tax increases. We had to do that in 2011 again until we got the formal sales tax approved. And, you know, one of the things you can do with property taxes, you know, we have been taking new construction only, obviously. So there's inflationary money that's left on the table, at least for the organization. It doesn't come out of the taxpayers' pockets, which is great. But that's money that could be put towards the water project if you needed it to. And those, PTEL is Property Tax Extension Limitation Law, so that's a tax cap. That does not apply to home rule municipalities. So if you achieve home rule status, theoretically, 1 year you can increase property taxes by whatever amount you deem necessary, and then you can cut them to zero the next year, and then go back and forth. There's no limitation on how that works. Other things, you know, cut staff, hiring freeze, wage reductions. You know, we talk about this every audit. We are at 87 full-time employees in 2022. Our peak was 98. We actually had 105 authorized at one point or another in 2005 and 2006, and couldn't hire them fast enough before the recession came. So we are still operating below recession levels for employment. Additionally, if you just think about the water fund as its own entity, obviously, they only have 6.5 employees. There's an operator, a foreman, a couple maintenance workers, the utility building clerk. So a portion of my salary, Rob's salary, Eric's salary, some other clerk staff gets paid out of the water fund, but it's a fraction of an employee. So really, there's 6.5 people that run the entire 20 square mile city water system. And we're still growing. I talked about it before. You know, we are not in this situation where revenues are stagnant or decreasing. So, you know, usually you don't have towns that are growing in revenue and in size, you know, laying off large percentages of their workforce. And so we don't think that's necessary here. And then you've got things like building permit fees, impact fees, water connection fees. We talk about that every few years. Yes, we probably should increase our water connection fees at some point. When we have a Lake Michigan project estimate, theoretically you should divide that cost between some new construction, increase your water connection fees so that new residents that come in are paying their fair share of that system. But that is all in the future. You have developments that are still being built out. Grand Reserve, one of them, hundreds of homes that still need to be built, and they have a FELOC, you know, for a number of years. So you can change the water connection fee, but it won't apply to that subdivision until they're done, and then they go build somewhere else. Additionally, other ideas we've talked about over the years, you can increase amusement taxes, but any amount you increase has to be spent on tourism. You can increase telecommunications taxes. By 1%, it's a limited value, but it's there. You can sell assets. Those are one-time revenue streams. We've talked about the old post office, the downtown bank building, et cetera. Those can generate a few hundred thousand, or maybe in the case of the bank building, $1 million. But that's one time. So you put that towards the project and other stuff. You can defer projects. And again, we talked about it. Like, would it be a good idea to defer a road project pavement in order to fund a Lake Michigan water source project? Probably not. You have different needs there, different funding streams. And then additionally, you can't even really defer any of the projects in the water fund because the vast majority of them are to go towards Lake Michigan. So all you'd be doing is delaying the connection and putting the water source at risk for the entire town. So limited flexibility there. So just some basics to think about. So everybody in town, businesses, residents included, pay around $4 million in water revenues to us to operate the water utility. So last year's staggered rate increase, again, we went from $17 bi-monthly up to $24, so an increase of $7 bi-monthly, $3.50 a month. And then the volumetric rate went from 430 to 480 per new cubic feet after 350 cubic feet. That generated, within the fiscal year, $350,000. Over a whole year, it's going to be about $650,000. So that gives you a frame of network. If we did that again, it would generate generally the same usage being equal, obviously. So, and again, with this rate increase we did last year, most of the residences in town saw an increase of less than 10.25 per billing cycle. So some other things just to think about. On top of all the things that we have to fund with Lake Michigan, you have legacy debt. We have had water treatment plants and other things that have been built over the past couple decades that we are still paying off. So we have about $1 million in existing debt obligations currently. And then obviously we've got our Lake Michigan program, which is going to be $1 million to $2 million a year in the next couple of years. And then after that, we're looking at $4 million to $6.5 million in actual capital outlay within this 5-year budget on a per year basis. So things are ramping up. We can sell bonds and do that, but those costs are going to start hitting within this five-year budget. So just to give you an idea, so we have debt service schedules for like $120 million. You know, they're $10 million a year, $11 million a year. That's what you're looking at. We don't know that that's going to be how we structure it, depending on the timing of the drawdowns that we do, the project timing, how bids come in. But it's safe to say that, you know, it's going to require millions of dollars in annual debt service to be able to afford this project, just for us. So that's even with low interest loans. So if you think about it, we've got $4 million in annual revenue now. You're looking at tacking several million dollars on top of that to be able to afford the project. So again, the actual funding portion of it for our five-year budget, you know, you're looking at $8 million in fiscal year 24. That's for like the well six that we talked about in the previous meeting. That's for some of the water main improvements we've had to add on in order to get IPR approval. And then, you know, in fiscal year 26, you're probably going to start adding construction costs in, which you pay water commission, to the tune of potentially $23 million. So that's what you're looking at from a funding perspective. So, and again, just to button this up here, your detailed cost estimates are not really going to be ready until summer. So we've still got a few more months before that comes into the picture. We need a few hundred thousand dollars in revenue in fiscal year 24 in order to just balance that budget with all the things that we're doing. So that's why we're looking at water rate increases, place of meeting tax increases, and then beyond that, it's in the millions of dollars per year. So we're talking about being here at a funding level and need to be way up here. So the question is, like last year, how much of an interim step do we want to take this year to next year? You know, the more you increase it now, the less you have to increase it later. The less you increase it now, the more you have to increase it later. So. And so that's a conversation to have. So here's a couple of scenarios. So scenario one, and I'm primarily looking at this from a fiscal year 24, which is our next fiscal year perspective. So again, we need a few hundred thousand dollars to make sure our fund balance in the water fund is 25%, balance that budget so the bond rating agencies don't see it and say, oh, you're not following your own policy, we're going to ding you on your credit rating, and then the next time we go up for a bond issuance, our interest rate. Okay, so place of meeting tax, let's say we did it November 1st, so half a fiscal year. Generate about $300,000 in fiscal year 24, and then it would generate about $700,000 annually thereafter. So that would be place of meeting tax, no water rate change in fiscal year 24. Scenario 2 is the exact opposite. You implement another phase water rate increase. For instance, you went from $24 by month, which is current, to $31, and then you took the volumetric rate from $480 to $530. You would get another few hundred thousand dollars in fiscal year 24 and then $700,000 annually thereafter. So for next year, it really is an either or proposition. You could do either one of them and solve the budget issues depending on what you want to do. And then there's scenario three, do nothing. So the risk of that, as I mentioned, the bond rating agencies, you'd be in deficit in your water fund. We would have enough cash flow citywide to be able to make payments. It wouldn't be an issue there with liquidity. But the bond rating agencies will look at us and say, you have this massive project in front of you. Your debt service or your fund balance next year is projected to be, let's say it's 15%. Your policy is 25%. Why aren't you at 25%? We're going to ding your credit rating, and then when you go out for bonds, you're paying percentages more on interest. So it costs us money to do that. And then obviously future rate increases for Lake Michigan, as I mentioned, would have to be higher and over a shorter time frame. So here's the policy decision, again. So you have a Lake Michigan water source project, requires millions of dollars in annual debt service payments, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years in the future, probably for a 30-year term is what we're guessing. Most precise cost estimates aren't going to be available for a few more months, so we really can't dial it in and say, we can do this ramp and it's going to end here and that's how we're going to pay for it. Yes, we'll get there, but not yet. The water fund is a deficit budget for fiscal year 24, as I mentioned, so you need some combination of a rate increase, a new alternate revenue stream, or a large increase in customer water usage, which we've seen from years past. Sometimes people use more water, our sales go up, and the budget gets a little bit better for that 1 year specifically than you're using more water from the aquifer. So then the question is, does the city council want to implement a place of meeting tax or a water rate increase in fiscal year 24, or a combination of? And just for your reference, every 1%, again, increase in your place of feeding tax generates $700,000 annually, which is the equivalent to 15 to 60% of the city's entire water sales annually. So that's that all in perspective. All right, some data, and again, sorry you can't see this. I put together every place in the meeting tax, or not, that I can find within our immediate region. So Kendall County, Cabela County, places where, that we think people may say, do I want to go to Yorkville and go out to eat, or do I want to go to Oswego or Plainfield or St. Charles or wherever it is, putting both their place of eating tax on here and also their sales tax rate. So we've already heard from some of the businesses, they say, you know, 8.25 sales tax rate plus another 1% or 2% is just going to price people out of the market, they're going to go somewhere else. And so we're trying to give you a point of reference there for what other towns are doing for that effective rate. And then additionally, if you want to cast a wider net, this is everything that we can Google and find and then search in the Department of Revenue's database across Chicagoland, really across the state, for who has a place in the meeting tax and their sales tax rate. So of note here, we did try to include more places in meeting, or more towns that don't have a place in meeting tax, that way it was represented here somewhat accurately, but the towns that have a place in meeting tax are overrepresented on this chart, because we just Googled it, pulled out the code books, put it into this chart for your reference. And then finally, this is a chart of our water rates over time, so you can kind of see where the water infrastructure fee has been. YDFD fee, which used to be on property taxes, and now the property tax is zero. They charge everything on a bi-monthly flat rate to the city's base rates and volumetric rates. So there were several years in here where we did not change the rates up until last year. And then even before fiscal year 11, my recollection was that there were a number of years prior to then where we kept things flat and water rates low for a long time before we had to adjust them in order to solve some of our budget issues. So that's all the information that I have to present. The budget schedule is up there again. Full presentation at the next meeting, public hearing later in the month, and then discussion or approval at the next few meetings in March and April. And that's it. Happy to take questions if anybody has them.
Tim or Brad, can you get the lights, please? Ken?
So the previous public works, I think we talked about, we need a letter water tower too, right?
Yep.
I didn't see that mentioned in the time frame here that you were going over.
It would be included. It is factored into this analysis. It would be one of these charts here.
26?
I think we've actually got the water treatment plant and the tower in 25, I want to say.
So that's okay. So that's a hit there too.
That's
like an $8 million one.
Yes.
But that's in your numbers here.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, Brad has updated the capital improvement plan with the latest information from Lake Michigan. All the information that you guys have been presented, including like the interconnection to Montgomery for $800,000 we talked about at Public Works a couple months ago. So that is all in the budget and funded, with a lot of revenue assumptions still to come.
Chris?
So this is all based on the fact that this is regarding water. Yorkville, Oswego, Montgomery, we all have to make certain criteria in order to get to this. Montgomery's in a real tough spot right now with their water loss and facing numbers that they don't have any solution for necessarily yet in order to achieve that funding. What happens if they fall out and they can't meet the criteria in our time frame?
Changes everything. I mean, it's pure prognostication. We've had the conversations. They seem relatively solid at the time. And just so everybody's aware, their cost estimates have gone from $50 to $60 million as a Lake Michigan to IDNR requiring them to replace $100 million of water main in the next like 6 to 7 years. So their total project cost is $150 million to complete. But they are working through that. So some of that they would have to replace anyway, because they have such high water loss. But they are working towards it. But if they back out, or let's say Oswego backs out, I would think that we would have to rethink what we're doing. I mean, the cost estimates obviously would go out the window, the governance structure we have to talk about. It would be months of discussion, and then, who knows what we're going
to do. Joel, but to follow up on that, and that's a very, very good question. Let's say the whole thing blew up, and we said our only option is Fox River Water. we've had presentations that even if we go to Fox River Water, the costs are very similar.
We know the costs are.
Yeah, they're you know, maybe we wouldn't have to expedite some of these things and do them in the next 5 years. We'd still have to do some of those in 10 years, but just the infrastructure itself was right around that $100 million. So we're still going to have to double
the timeline a little.
A little bit, yeah.
Cost.
Correct.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Other questions? None?
All right.
Okay, thank you. Oh, wait. Thank you.
We'll follow up from earlier then. So basically, we'll be increasing all three on the water bill, all three fees, the road, the water infrastructure fee, and the water rate.
Depends on which option. If
well,
we,
it sounds like what we're talking about.
Well,
there was no discussion there about the water infrastructure fee or the sewer infrastructure fee.
That's a good point, yeah.
It was all rates. I mean, you could wrap them all together if you wanted to, and if there would be no net impact to the residents other than how it's shown on the bill. But we don't factor that into the policy decision. We just kind of set that aside. The road infrastructure fee is part of the subdivision cluster that we need to figure out.
But that paid though on the same water bill.
It is, yes. Yeah,
because that's system. What I always hear. They always with this fee, and then so.
But that includes your garbage pickup, includes sanitation.
Right. Sometimes maybe one under one amount is almost.
Yeah. Well,
we've talked in the future, and we've talked about here, that we may have to go to monthly bills just
yep.
to make it more practical for people's budgets.
YBSD has always discussed, too, do they want to do some of their billing, the amount that you charge them, would that be more or less of a hassle or operational issue for them? So all those things are up in the air.
But the specific fee on there for water infrastructure, this is not proposing a change to that.
Correct.
Yep. And to follow up the Ken again, in one of these options, if y'all were supportive of that 1% place of eating tax, this would not have a rate increase for water next year in next year's budget. We'd have to address the following year. I'm not saying we wouldn't, but it would allow us to hold off on about a 15% to 18% water rate increase. So Craig, I'm sorry, Ken.
Is there any
not. We have one rate for everybody, residential or commercial. It's something that I'm somewhat familiar with, and that there are towns that do it. Most of them, as far as I'm aware, will end up actually discounting the rate slightly at the top end. So if the largest water users are paying millions of dollars, maybe it's half of that or something. But that's a discussion that we could have. That goes hand in hand with our ERP system. We would need to update to be able to have a different rate structure for different types of users, and then we would have to plan that out. That would be something that we could look at.
And Craig, to follow up on that as well, what we need to keep in mind with Michigan Water is there are a couple components to the cost of the water. One is all the infrastructure. Another is just operational costs for staff. But the third component will be, we will have to buy the water. And, it's something we can talk about, but I don't know that we want to discount the actual raw cost of water to end users, so.
I wasn't talking about discounting.
I'm sorry?
I said I wasn't talking about discounting.
Okay, I'm just asking.
That's the opposite.
Okay.
It's the opposite.
Yeah.
Other questions? Nothing else? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Bart.
Perfect.
We have no public hearings tonight. We do have citizen comments on items on the agenda, so if anyone wants to comment on anything on the agenda, please step to the podium, state your name, and
Todd Miller in Yorkville. I'll cover first off of the presentation. Ben was very modest. He was an integral part of helping our wrestling team make it to team state. That hadn't happened since like 2012. 10 years ago was the last time the Yorkville High School wrestling team made it down to Bloomington and wrestled for the team championship. Ben wrestled for the individual championship at 220, but the team is 14 wrestlers who wrestled as a team, and they were successful in qualifying and making it to the semifinal round and then lost, and then actually our wrestling coach brother is the wrestling coach at Lockport. So we had Yorkville wrestling Lockport for the third and fourth place title, and Lockport was successful, but the Oster family was an integral part of wrestling in for third and fourth place. So that was one thing that happened this weekend on Saturday. The other thing was Ben had a female teammate who also wrestled for the championship at 120, I believe, in the female individual championship, which was going on at the same time in Bloomington. And she wasn't successful, but she finished second place. The other thing that happened on Saturday was that the smaller school in town, Yorkville Christian on the south end, they were successful in winning the semifinal match for the team championship, and wrestled Cole City for the championship. And in the finals, it went down to the last match, and Cole City won 31-30. So our area is well represented in a very demanding sport. And not only that, but it's only the second year that the girls have had an opportunity to wrestle. Before, they used to just wrestle with the boys, and we didn't have a girls-only category. And now we do. So that was something I wanted to share, because he was pretty modest about that accomplishment, because it hadn't been done since 2012, when my son was a freshman and was on that team. So the other thing that I'll share with you is that recently, and these two reporters will help verify this if you need to, Montgomery petitioned like 6 months ago to the county to ask for additional funding, which they were able to receive from federal funding from, I believe it was the American Rescue Plan. I may be wrong, it might be more, but anyway, to the tune of, Montgomery went to the county board and asked for money for Boulder Hill. And if I remember right, it was $2.8 million, is that?
$2 million.
$2 million? Okay. They got $2 million of funding to help put some of those leaks over in Boulder Hill. So Oswego, I believe, also had an ask of, what was it, $600,000? $500,000, thank you, gentlemen, for there. So there might be some funds left over, John, with your connections up there. You might ask for a little bit of funding, too. So anyway, it was just a suggestion that two of the three people that are participating in this Lake Michigan water effort actually got some funding from the county, and it might be an ask that could be made and might be considered. It might take 6 months, but it's something to think about and consider. It might save y'all some money and get some return on your the tax money that you're already sent in and received. It might get returns to the citizens of Yorkville.
Thank you, Todd. Would anyone else like to speak to items on the agenda? If so, step forward and state your name.
Hi, I'm TJ Manning, the owner of Rizzotti's, as well as partner in the Fox Bay Group, which owns and manages Silver Fox, Dakota's, so, Smoothie King, and Coney Company. We're against this new food and beverage tax. We think it's unfair to the restaurants. Many of us have been here for years supporting Yorkville, from t-ball teams and churches to schools. But the last 2 years, Yorkville has become a big hub in Kendall County for new exciting restaurants and businesses. And the first time we're actually bringing people in from all over Chicagoland. Most of us are still struggling from the COVID shutdowns, and now with inflation out of control, minimum wage increases, and lack of employees. The restaurants run on the thinnest margins out of any retail type of business, usually less than 10 to 15% profit. Since May of last year, when inflation spiked, we've seen food prices go up 10 to 15%. We've raised our prices to the limits, to where our customers are screaming at us about the high costs. Because of this inflation, customer accounts at just Rosati's alone are down every day. We were down 3,000 customers last year from May through the end of the year. Mandatory minimum wage increases of $1 per year equates to about a 7% increase in cost for us, and that happens every January. We've been forced to pass on credit card fees to our customers. Even after doing that, the Rosati's in our food, we lost $100,000 last year. We understand this is a pass-along task, but customers still have to pay for it. Sales tax, credit card fees, now food and beverage tax, plus their tip. Customers will go to other towns to save money, or they will take the money out of the server's tips. If you pass this tax, your food will lose. Restaurants will close, you will lose new restaurants and staff to other towns. Thank you.
Thank you, TJ. Anyone else wish to speak on items on the agenda? No? Okay, thank you. We'll move on. Next, we have a consent agenda. See, y'all got back to business with this thing. We have bills for approval for $713,312.80. Treasurer's report for January. We have the ordinance 2313 approving the first amendment lease agreement by and between United States of Yorkville and Sprint Com LLC. We have, this is a good one, the contract award for 2314 Baseline Road. Accept the bid and award contract to Builder Paving in the amount not to exceed $526,888, and I got an email on that today. We also have the construction engineering agreement for Baseline Road. We have 2316 Bristol Ridge Road resurfacing, balancing authorization number one, authorizing the mayor and city engineer to execute, and that wasn't on your list of roads that we approved. We have Prairie Point parking lot improvements, change order balancing. We have 2318 for Fox Hill, a supplemental resolution request for expenditure. And we have 2322, the Cornelius Road interceptor change order number one. And that's the one dealing with Bright Farms, is that correct? Yes. Okay, that was a lot. Y'all warm out there. Is there a motion and a second to approve?
So moved. Second.
Okay, Hope and Merrick, this no discussion per Mr. Funkhauser's rules, so we will do a roll call.
Cope?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you all. Well, to Mayor's report number one, I don't have anything. Tim, do you want to talk about St. Patrick's Day, or do you have another meeting coming down then? We have another meeting. Well, yeah, because you have 2 weekends. There's events going on before our next meeting, too. The Saturday before, correct?
So this year we have 2 Saturdays of Irish Fun on Saturday, March 11th. South Lake is here tonight. They have their annual, South Lake Run, 5K run on Saturday at 9 a.m. on March 11th. And then afterwards they'll have Irish shooting and Irish DJ music in their place. So it's South Bank focused on Saturday, March 11th. And then Saturday, March 18th. We will have the Irish Parade right on Hydraulic Avenue, right in front of Riverfront Park. We have our Leprechaun Hunt. There will be activities going on at other bars and restaurants in the downtown area. And then at 6:30, we have the fireworks show over on Countryside Parkway in 47.
Got a lot going on.
We'll be excited for a couple weekends.
Anything you'd like to add about your events going on? I know, Mark, you had the Turkey Bowl a couple weeks ago, and it was about 55 degrees. You had a good crowd for that, though, didn't you?
We did.
Yeah, that's good. TJ, anything you want to talk about? I'm going to get the bookends tonight. People mad at me on both sides of the meeting, so. okay, excellent. Well, then that's all I had for my first mayor's report, which is actually the second one. Now we're to Public Works Committee report. The one thing I will ask on this is item four, if we could push that to the next meeting, please. I just had some things I want to get clarified. Is that okay? Yeah, please. Okay, thank you. I should have told you to. I apologize.
You read all the rest of my motions in the consent agenda. So.
Were those in the consent agenda?
No.
Oh.
No, but I gave you a lot of them.
No, I was thinking they should have been, though.
I was feeling bad because we mixed it around with the news reports. I'm like, I'll give
them a couple. Listen, it doesn't matter. I'm out of breath. That's hard for me when I'm talking.
All right.
When I'm exercising, different issue.
Fair enough. Well, yes, we pushed that one, but I still got three for you, if you're good with that. The first one would be POU 2023-19, our 2023 road to letter, better roads, MFP resolution and cost estimate, which is a motion to approve an MFP resolution and cost estimate for the 2023 road to better roads program and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Second by Funkhauser. Any discussion? Roll call.
Clocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Koch.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Item number two, POU 2023-20. This is the 2023 water main replacement contract award. A motion to approve the bid and award contract to Performance Construction and Engineering LLC. The amount not to exceed $1,799,287.00 and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
There's second, Soling. Georgiana, Sunset, Prairie, and I feel like I missed one.
Pleasure.
Pleasure, yeah. It's a good project there. Okay, discussion, roll call.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Koch.
Aye.
Plocher.
Present.
Motion carries.
And item number three, POU 2023-21, water main improvements contract. Professional services agreement, construction engineering agreement, which is a motion to approve the 2023 improvements, contract A, professional services agreement, construction engineering agreement, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Coke?
All right.
Thank you. Roll call, or sorry, discussion? None. Roll call.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling.
Thank you, Ken.
Merrick.
Aye.
Koch.
Aye.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Do we need to do a...
Our attorney says we do. She's...
Okay.
So I want a motion to table.
Till the next meeting.
Merrick. Okay. I have more for this meeting.
Oh, I heard... Trans here. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor? All in favor? One more time?
Aye.
All right. We're just doing voice. Pause. Okay. Next meeting. Thank you. I don't want to. What was the second line? Was it Coke?
Trans.
Oh, Coke made the motion.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Economic Development Committee report. Thank you. Public safety? Admin? Park Board? Planning and Zoning Commission? Huh, that's me. Okay, I'm looking for a motion to approve BZC 2022-25 and EDC 2310, an ordinance approving the rezoning to the B2 Retail Commerce Business District of the property located at 105 East Spring Street. Is there a motion and a second? Funkhauser, second. Who was the second over there? Coke. This meets all the requirements, correct, of our zoning?
Correct.
And there's other similar zoning up and down 47, correct?
That is correct.
Any other questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Coke.
Aye.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Transier.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. City Council report, anything? City clerk report, anything?
No report.
Excuse me, voice is squeaking. Community and liaison reports. Staff report?
No reports.
Well, we already did the mayor's report, number one. Additional business? Citizen comments on items not on the agenda? Anyone? Thought maybe we're gonna say no report again.
Hi, Molly Krumsky. For what it's worth, I also kind of agree about the restaurant tax. It's probably not the best thing to do to the restaurants post-COVID. And we just kind of got to the point where a restaurant would stay around longer than a year in Yorkville. So we've kind of been enjoying that. I'd like to say thank you to Craig for working out things with the noise violations at Pins. Thank you for being available to talk with the owner sure that your neighbors love you right now. So enjoy that. I also like to say thank you to Chris Funkhauser, just for being open to communicating with us and knowing what's going on in the city and caring about what's going on in the city. You're a huge asset, and I just want to thank you for all your hard work. I would endorse you, except that would probably make you lose, so I will hold off on that right now. So as we appear to be moving into a new phase of the debate over adult entertainment in Yorkville, I'd like to talk about your rights as legislators for just a couple of minutes, but I have to address a few misconceptions about the separation of church and state first. It tends to come up a lot when I speak before boards and councils because I intentionally frame my arguments within a biblical context, and people like to push back on that, citing separation of church and state as their reason for their resistance. The phrase separation of church and state originated in a letter from Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Baptists in 1802. The Baptist Association initially wrote a letter to Jefferson complaining that their state constitution lacked wording that protected religious freedom as an inalienable right. Jefferson replied by citing the First Amendment's Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause, citing that these protections built a wall of separation between church and state. The Establishment Clause prohibits the formation of a state-sponsored church, which would elevate one religion over another. The Free Exercise Clause prohibits restrictions upon the free exercise of religion. Whenever I have approached you asking you to conduct business in a way that reflects Christ's values, I didn't do it because I wanted you to make laws that elevated Christianity over other faiths. I did it because I wanted to encourage you, those of you who currently follow Christ and those who are beginning to see the need to follow Christ, to personally employ biblical moral standards when deciding what is good and loving and just. It is a misinterpretation of the Establishment Clause and an infringement upon the Free Exercise Clause to ask a representative to put his religious views aside while making political decisions. Our faiths are the foundation of who we are. They influence every aspect of our lives, including politics. Who we serve shapes our moral standard. There's no escaping that. And we all put our faith in someone, whether or not we have the ability to identify or articulate who that someone is. Although most of the world lives under the illusion that there are hundreds of choices, there are only two. Choice number one, your Creator. Jesus Christ says that the life of every man is precious, as he was created with the capacity to reflect the nature of our Creator. He also says that homosexuality is a symptom that arises when man completely refuses to acknowledge and reflect God. And that it is neither loving nor righteous to encourage people in or into lifestyles that separate them from their Creator. Jesus affords mankind the free will to do as it pleases, but has strong words of judgment for anyone that would lead astray or take advantage of the innocent, vulnerable population. All of that considered, a legislator applying a biblical moral standard would likely structure their legislation in a way that allowed men to do what they chose in their own homes. Some may even go as far as to set up red light districts. But all would be driven to preserve a safe, unsexualized public space in which children could grow without stumbling blocks being placed along their path. Choice number two, the destroyer. The scriptures, they glorify Satan, which is actually just the worship of the unrestricted will of man, call for each man to do as he pleases without causing harm to others. However, those same scriptures provide no objective standard for what is deemed harmful to others. Homosexuality? Sure, if it feels good. Pedophilia? Why not? As long as the kids seem to like it, because after all, love is love. As a result, a legislator with a subjective, worldly moral standard will constantly be changing laws to allow for the next thing that our television tells us that we should be doing. When Satan rules, man's law trumps God's law. Satan is actually pretty famous for that strategy, yet we seem not to be able to recognize it. And the thing that I found most consistent about the very brief conversations that I've had with each of you over the last 7 months is that every single one of you mentioned that you felt powerless. Some were unwilling, but some felt powerless to stand up against what is happening in Yorkville because these very same things can be seen on television. We need to ask ourselves where those ideas came from, the things that we see in movies and on television and in social media. Who was it who decided that one day RuPaul and his drag queen friends would be family-friendly entertainment? Who decided that it would be acceptable for Cardi B to sing songs for us about the humidity level of her lady parts? Who was the originator of the ritual that took place at this year's Grammy Awards? It was mankind, the unrestricted will of mankind, that without intervention will continue to grow more and more and more depraved. When the moral standard is a sliding scale, the possibilities are endless. But I'm not asking you to legislate a barrier to man's depravity. Even if that were possible, it wouldn't get to the root of the problem. My hope for you is that your worldview will be so impacted by the love of Christ that he has for his creation, the goodness of his commands, and the peace that they bring, that you will turn aside from using a subjective, man-centered moral standard to using an objective, Christ-centered one. We all have a moral standard, whether it was developed passively through experience or we adopted it intentionally. We all have the right to live, love, and legislate by our own moral standard. America is a constitutional republic. We elect representatives to legislate on our behalf. When we elect practicing Christian representatives, their moral standards will lead them to shape society into ways that reflect the moral standard of Christ. When we elect worldly representatives, their moral standards will lead them to pass laws that reflect whatever standards the prince of this world is broadcasting on his airwaves. That serpent of old is appearing as an angel of light to trick us, once again, into believing that we are qualified to decide what is right and wrong for mankind. That serpent who preaches love but twists the definition so badly that even the unchurched are left with an empty void after being exposed to his form of love. He encourages us to do whatever our hearts desire without harming others. And we fail to see that those two things are paradoxical when the standard for harm is left up to the general consensus of fallen man. The pleasures derived by the drug use of a single individual can destroy entire families. The excitement that someone may feel when exposing consenting children to things that their brains are incapable of processing causes them permanent psychological damage. The thrill we get from glorifying Satan during award shows and Super Bowl halftime events destroys entire nations. You have the right to serve whomever you choose, which means you also have the right and the power to stop eating what they're feeding you, should you desire change. You can just say no. Enough is enough. The First Amendment solidifies that right for you as a private citizen and as a legislator. I've never come here to ask you for special favor from this council because of my faith. Up until this point, I have purely asked you to uphold existing law. But as you transition into actually being able to discuss the future of adult entertainment in your bill, I'm simply asking you to be thoughtful and intentional about who shapes your moral standard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Valerie, welcome. Mayor Bird.
Good evening, everyone. I'm going to keep this very short. But in this time, we have a lot of people showing up at our different meetings, especially the school board with their individual issues. The group that I belong to, called the American Association of University Women, has been making it our duty to go to these meetings and just try to remind our elected officials, and I know what that's like to be sitting in those chairs, that you have some 20,000 people you represent who are not in this room tonight complaining, which means that a huge majority of your constituents are happy. Because when they're happy, they don't show up. We know that. They don't come to the meetings. They don't call you. They don't harass you. The ones who show up have an issue. But if you don't have 100 people in this room, I think you can feel pretty good about what you're doing. And I'm saying this, I don't care what your party is, what your affiliations are. I think you're doing a good job for our city. And And I'd like to personally thank you as somebody who once sat in those chairs. I know what you're going through. So there's a lot of us out there that appreciate what you do every night. Thank you.
Thank you. And Valerie, mm-hmm. thank you for hiring Bart.
Well, I was looking around the room. There's a lot of people I hired.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Oh, you hired Kathy? Well, let me retract. Kathy is derelict of duty, I've been told. So. Anyone else? Welcome back.
Yes.
Just like the TV show in the 70s.
Yeah. Welcome back, Todd.
Welcome back, Todd.
You're welcome. As you know, I can be a pretty persistent individual myself. But my persistence has usually been about transparency and open government and accountability and those types of things. Something that's fairly neutral. So anyway, what I would talk about here is that I do realize one, freedom to speak freely, that's in our Constitution. I also recognize there is a separation between church and state. And the other thing that I would say is that city limits are only like 500 feet from my property. So I don't think to vote here in Yorkville, but some of the decisions you all make, do have a direct effect on me just because I am so close to the city limits. And I would just state that, kind of echo what Val just said, is that I'm perfectly happy with your decisions, your morals, the foundation of what you all are all about, the ethics, and I'd be one of the first ones at this podium if I didn't think things were going well, and you were not doing your job. So that said, I think that there is an election here. They do have consequences. That's coming up here soon. And hopefully we'll continue the path that we're on and continue to govern accordingly and take into consideration everybody and where everybody else is coming from, because there is a happy medium, and a lot of us are Christians. We may not be evangelical. We do believe, but the other part is that we're not force feeding those decisions or values on anybody else. And I would encourage others to look and see, and be objective thinkers and take into consideration everybody else, because we all have to get along and we all have to make this town work together. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Well, seeing none, we'll take a motion adjourned. I do have to hurry because I got a conference call with Joel Esteen and Jim Baker, so I've got to make sure I get that call.
Yes.
Motion, second?
Yes.
Roll call?
Americ?
Yes.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you all. Have a good night.